Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Hello, my name is Maike Tiervogel. I'm the publisher of Pyrene Press and the author of Kauthar, and I have the huge pleasure today talking to you on Radio Gorgeous.
Welcome, Maike. Could you introduce the very timely, Kauthar to Radio Gorgeous?
Yes, so Kauthar basically, like all my novels, has a personal starting point. And it really is, I studied Arabic in my early 20s. And when I studied Arabic, I was thinking of converting to Islam. And I wanted to go back to that point and explore the whys, why I wanted to convert, what attracts me to Islam and attracted me particularly in that point to Islam. Then, of course, I constructed a fictional character, Lydia, who in her 30s converts to Islam and becomes Kauthar, and then really becomes mingled up with the political events in Iraq. And that's what the book is about.
So tell us, is that what brought you? Where are you from originally?
Germany.
And is going to SOAS,
yeah,
what originally brought you to London?
No. Very first, it was a love. Mm-hmm. I followed a man here. However, I had in the back of my mind that I wanted to study Arabic, really, because I lived as a German. I thought I needed to see Israel. So I lived in Israel for a year after finishing school. And once I was in Israel, I thought I need to now understand the Arab side. And so when I was here in London, I found the undergraduate course in Arabic at SOAS and decided to study Arabic. So what led me as a German, of course, to Israel is our history. I studied the Second World War at school. One of my grandfathers joined the Nazi Party in the mid-30s. My other grandfather was in the army all the way through the war. Mm-hmm. And so I, of course, you know, as a German, wanted to look at my own history, personal history, but also my nation's history. And therefore, I thought I needed to go and see Israel. Mm-hmm. So, but once, of course, you're in Israel, you realize that you need to see the Arab side. And I love to look at issues, look at topics from all sides, because mm-hmm. reality is never as simple as we think it is.
Absolutely.
So that was my main driving force. And then, yes, so when I was in Israel, of course, I realized that as a then 20-year-old blonde, blue-eyed Caucasian, I can't just turn up in an Arab country and start waitressing. So when I came to London, I had in the back of my mind that I wanted to go back to the Middle East, to live in an Arab country, to understand the cultures and the culture, the language. And the course at SOAS was ideal for me to do that.
Mm-hmm. And so what, during the course of your study, you say you were drawn to Islam,
mm-hmm.
and what drew you, what did it answer in you, what did it provide you?
I think, I've been sort of a spiritual seeker, if you want, mm-hmm. definitely from the age of 14, 15 onwards. I remember that, I was baptized and confirmed as a Protestant Lutheran because that's what my family are, but more out of tradition rather than religious sentiment. And so when I was 14, I decided to go to church every Sunday on my own too. And I struggled with the Christian belief, especially with the idea of the Trinity. And so when I came, when I looked at Islam more closely, what attracted me to Islam were a number of things. And what I love about Islam is a number of things. One is the five prayers a day. I love the structure of it. Mm-hmm. You know exactly when to do what to do. I also love the fact that there are rules and rituals around eating, around what to dress, how to dress. And from a more theological point of view, I like the fact that God is not divisible, according to Islam, and also that it's all inclusive of all the Old Testament prophets, and it sees Jesus as a prophet too. So again, the inclusiveness appealed to me. But I think looking back at it, there was also a big factor was the fact that I was incredibly lonely in London. You know, I was a young woman who just arrived in London. And so I wanted a community as well. And so all of that appealed hugely to me. And in fact, what's interesting is I went to a literary festival in Bangladesh recently, and I had a flyover in Dubai airport. And I went into one of the prayer rooms, and I have never been in a prayer room in any airport. And I watched a woman there perform her Muslim prayers. And after she'd left, I decided to also, I mean, I haven't prayed the Muslim way for a very long time. Since I finished actually the research for Kausa. And so I then decided to pray the Muslim way again. And again, I was just reminded of how beautiful it is to actually accompany your prayer with physical movements. It gives the head far less time to stray. So that was, it was a funny moment where I just sort of looked with a pang of nostalgia almost back at a crossroad in my life where I could have taken a different way, and I decided not to. So, okay.
And why did you decide not to?
I think, again, in retrospect, in hindsight, I unconsciously already knew I would have converted for the wrong reasons, because I would not have converted for religious reasons. I would have converted for wanting to be held, you know. And I think that's not the job of any religion. If you want to be held, you need to find friends. Religion can answer spiritual questions.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
I think that brings us to the perfect point to then discuss Kauthar.
Yes.
Because she is a woman like many a convert before her. And there's always this sort of religious suspicion of the convert, mm-hmm. you know, and the convert who believes more than you do is, mm-hmm. you know, I'm Jewish, we have to, more Jew than you, you know what I mean? It's like uber convert, you know? Because there is, for Lydia, she's in her 30s. She is a woman who is lost. Mm-hmm. She's had a disastrous love affair with a married man. She's sort of, in not making choices, made all the wrong choices, which easily happens. Mm-hmm. She doesn't seem to have many friends. She doesn't have a community around her. Even the people she works with, there's a remove. And so into that divide, or into that, you know, sort of yawning space, she does discover the structure, the beauty and the obedience, mm-hmm. And the lack of thought and choice almost in that. Like, mm-hmm. this is a go-to place for mm-hmm. her. And it seems, you know, it seems to work for her mm-hmm. in that way.
Yes.
And then she gets married. Yes. And tell us a bit more of the story without telling us too much. more about what her journey and where it takes her.
Yeah. So I have to say, I think her that she converts for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. She wants a religion. She wants a system of rituals of a religious belief. And she converts for the right reasons. And then, of course, as an author, as a writer, what I was fascinated about was thinking, okay, so what then would make her turn to or become an extremist? What exactly is it? Because converting to Islam does not make you extremist. Converting to any religion does not make you an extremist. And I wanted to explore the psychological reasons, because I really think that you become an extremist not because of the religious system, but because of psychological factors mm-hmm. from within you. And when she meets Rafiq, that was, in some ways, the way I write is I don't know where my characters go. Mm-hmm. I have a rough sentiment. So I knew, because I start with the end. So mm-hmm. she's blown herself up and she has a moment to live. And in some ways, that's what I had to give myself as a writer. I knew that if I wanted emotionally to follow my character, I need to create a situation where I have no way out. Mm-hmm. So that's it. So I start with the ending. And then, of course, I test things. So I give her Rafiq. And I didn't know this might be the reason why she will turn to extremism. I have to admit, in the back of my mind, I wanted him not to turn her into an extremist, because I did, of course, before I sat down to write Kawthar, I looked at female terrorists. So I read quite a lot of books about Ulrike Meinhof and Gudrun Enslin from the German Red Army fraction. I looked at the Chechen Black Widows. And one thing which became really quickly clear to me with all these women is that they, on the whole, aren't becoming terrorists because they are misled, in inverted commas, by men. You know, they know exactly what they're doing. That they become extremists or join terrorist groups for very similar reasons to men. Isolation, wanting to belong, ideology, and often also anger.
So making a difference, making an impact.
Yes, exactly.
I'll show them.
Yeah, that sort of mentality. Attitude. So, but that's again, that's the outside factors. Mm-hmm. I wanted to understand emotionally what would drive my character to eventually blow herself up. And what's interesting is I think what emerged is for me at least, and there I didn't know that this what would emerge. Is a woman who is who actually doesn't understand. So she's desperate for love. She wants to be loved and wants to be, you know, wants to be loved by her parents, by Rafiq, by God. But what she doesn't understand is that love actually requires compromises, and that there is no perfect love. We can't give perfect love, nor can we ever receive perfect love. And that was a revelation for me. I didn't know that. I had to write, in some ways, this book and go on the journey with my protagonist to really understand that.
It also struck me that what's required is self-love, and that's something she could not find, and she could not find forgiveness in herself
for
herself.
No, exactly, yeah. It felt very much like, almost like there came a point where I thought it's like almost a screw getting tight, more and more, you know, tighter. And it was fascinating to actually observe it.
Yeah, well, because she sort of internally combusts before she externally combusts.
Yeah.
You know, in a way. And what's striking is that it is a really seamless, very plausible path to that extremism. It's a way in. And I think that's a really important thing to explore right now.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Young men have always run off to war. I mean, come on, big cause. We get to, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, why the conversation is going out. Why are they running to Syria?
Yeah. Yes.
And to me, it strikes me, it's really important. It's not they, it's us. They are part of us.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem is that you keep calling them they.
Yes.
You know? Stop with the us and them.
Yes.
You know? We start with the us.
Yeah. No, that's exactly, precisely my point. And that's why, for example, Lydia is white. She's Caucasian. She's articulate, well-educated. She's in her 30s. She's not 17. I wanted an articulate protagonist, because I thought if I, Micah, who sits here, can emotionally follow her, so what does that actually mean about me? And ultimately, if the reader can follow, what does it say about the reader? Exactly that, this us and the other, that's part of the issue and part of, I think, the problem.
And separating that out. Okay, for instance, a young man, you know, in Charleston, South Carolina, just shot a bunch of people. That was extremism, and we have to separate extremism from Islam.
Religion. Yeah.
And because it's not fair on anybody.
Yeah.
You know? And that's where, you know, one of the things that gets murky, because also what emerges, one of the things you did bring up, I just wanted to mention this, is because there are a lot of things that need to be examined. One of the things that is just touched upon just in one line is one of the huge divides that comes up is when she meets Rafiq, she says, oh, he's a Shiite.
Mm-hmm.
as opposed to a Sunni, which is one of the massive divides and one of the things we also don't have a very good grasp on,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that's being exploited,
mm-hmm.
And is another push factor for people joining ISIS, etc.,
yes.
that I don't think is fully understood.
Yes.
And that Rafiq and his family seem quite reasonable thinking people.
Yes.
It was also this blind obedience without thinking.
Yeah.
That even since Plato.
Yes.
We've said, no, true philosophy, true thought cannot, and true good living. The good life cannot be lived if you don't apply your own thinking to
yes.
the situation. Yes, through the prism of your religion, but you have to be responsible, and that's what she gives up.
Yes, and that's really also, yeah, and yeah. The challenge I wanted to, I put myself, so because again, coming back to this idea that I think she converts for the right reasons, then I wanted mm-hmm. to see, so what would make her, so initially I think she interprets the religious text as symbolic text in the correct way, and then something happens, and she flips it. Actually, mm-hmm. all around, almost, you know, turning it upside down. And exactly what drove her to do that, to understand, one, you know, the religious or attacks first this way, and then suddenly in a totally different way, justifying eventually with it a senseless crime. Mm-hmm. And so that was, again, the journey I wanted to understand, yes. Mm-hmm.
Radio Gorgeous, online, on your phone, on a podcast, or on your tablet. Listen anywhere, anytime.
I will say, and I'm leading to Pyrene Press here, I make another transition, that Cathar is a brief but very intense novel. And I believe that Pyrene Press, which you have founded, also focuses on brief fiction. So
yes.
And why that focus? Why in translation? Tell me about Pyrene Press.
Okay. So, yeah, so Pyrene, as you said, specializes in translated fiction only. All my authors are award winners and or bestsellers in their own countries. But these books are also we only publish books under 200 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So short novels or novellas. And why? Because it's my passion. I'm passionate about the short form. I yeah. love books under 200 pages. And
you're
because
busy,
I think,
you can get it done, it's targeted.
Yes, although I have to say, people are always surprised when I say, you know, because they think it's to do with being time, you know, being efficient with time. Mm-hmm. Sadly, it isn't the case because, for example, in my case, my first draft is usually about 4 to 5 times as long. So I think actually there's a real art, and I've learned a lot from my own authors yeah. there in compressing and using voices to actually express a lot of sentiment. So often short novels and novellas and a lot of the Pyrene books, you don't have an overarching narrator. You have voices, and it's left up to the reader to judge. And again, that is what I find compelling with short novels, is that it's not spoon-feeding me as a reader. It gives me space to think. There's no judgment. The author doesn't, on the whole, say, this is a baddie and this is a goodie. Yeah. You're left alone with it. And you can, and again, that's food for thought. And I love that as, you know, when I'm reading short fiction. And that's why I also wanted to write short fiction. I wanted to write something, you know, I actually admire.
Mm-hmm.
So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
And so what led you to write? This is your third book. What led you to start writing?
I wrote before I published. I became mm-hmm. a publisher. So I've been writing for a very long time. And it's one of my creative heroes is is the French-American artist Louise Bourgeois.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants, so she's of course not a writer, or she has written stuff, but she was a sculptor. And she said once, you don't use wood, you don't work with wood because you love working with wood. That's rubbish, she said in her way. It's because wood allows you to express something another material doesn't allow you to express. And I feel that's exactly the same for me with plot, voice, and storyline. It's exactly, it allows me to express something I couldn't otherwise express.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's always to do with an exploration. If I always say, if I were to be able to express what, to express, for example, what I said with Kautha in one sentence before I started writing it, I wouldn't have bothered.
And we would have been robbed.
Yeah,
exactly. And we would have all been the poorer.
And the same, I do make the same demand on my own authors. So mm-hmm. I respond to texts where I feel they're alive. And I think you can feel it. If there's a text, if the writer sat down to explore something which felt important to them, that makes the text alive. And then as a reader, I can use it to explore perhaps a similar thing as the author initially intended, but perhaps something totally different.
Mm. Yes, that sense of discovery.
Yes. Yeah.
Gives it urgency.
Yeah.
And life.
Exactly. Yeah.
As opposed to sort of dictating something or something by rote.
Yes. Yeah. And just sort of, if it's something, I'm not interested in sort of stories that, I'm not interested, and therefore as a publisher, I'm not interested in stories which basically tell us everything we already know anyway. They have to give us different angles on mm-hmm. reality, shift our perception of reality a bit.
Mm.
So that's the sort of books I'm trying to find with Pyrini. Yes.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Micah.
Pleasure. Thank you, Donna.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us, contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com, and to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
Take my problem to the United Nations.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.